The Collision of Tech, Money, and Access with legendary author William Gibson. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Molly Wood, your new host. This week, we're introducing some of the topics we'll be covering as we relaunch the show, like looking at who has access to life-changing technology and who doesn't. We're calling this series Evenly Distributed, and that is from a quote by the science fiction writer William Gibson. He wrote Neuromancer and invented the word cyberspace, and he also said, "The future is already here. It's just not very evenly distributed." So to kick off our series, here is Mr. Gibson. Hi there. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
So this phrase, the future is already here, it's just not evenly distributed yet, is a theme that's present in a lot of your writing. It is attributed to you. Did you actually say it?
I'm sure I did, and probably many times before it was remarked on, but it was something in conversation, possibly in an interview. But given that I'm a sort of hoarder of my own good lines, I felt it was so apt, at least in regard to what I was doing, that I could use it over and over. But there's no precise written work of mine that anyone's ever been able to attribute it to.
Well, we'll give it to you. Do you feel like it's something that applies so broadly, not just to your writing, but also to the world around us?
Well, when I first uttered it, I'm sure that I assumed that it had always been the case. It's not something about, wow, here we are in futurity itself. It's been like that. I mean, at one time, we can imagine there was a small group of people who had discovered iconography. They could make crude images of something, and they were the first people ever to do that. If we look at the history of colonialism over the last 500 years, you see these the strangers turn up and they have all this crazy tech that you can't even get your head around. That was the future. But nobody else had it.
What do you think are the consequences, even the ones you've laid out in your books, of technology not being evenly distributed?
Well, in my second novel, one of the characters thinks the very rich are no longer even remotely human. And she thinks that because the guy she's talking to, it's like 800 pounds of cancerous human cells living immortally in an Olympic swimming pool. But he's a very rich dude. So no one is so vulgar as to question the state of his existence. And so you have actual, in real life, billionaire tech entrepreneurs casually announcing that they expect to live a very long time indeed because they can buy the blood of young people and be transfused by it on a very regular basis. And they can, and they'll pay for it, and it'll be legal. But that's getting seriously, seriously weird. And who's going to stop them? And indeed, should anyone stop them? So you have one group of people with perhaps three times the expected lifespan of the rest of the planet. Where will that be after a few hundred years?
Do you think outside the world of your books that people who do have access to technology have some sort of responsibility to those who don't?
I think so. I believe we all have some responsibility to everyone, and particularly to those who have less. But that's a political opinion of mine, or a philosophical belief of mine. And some people would consider it, lots of people would very vocally consider it to be very wrong.
You have said before that you're not predicting the future, you're just generating scenarios. Do you have a Frankenstein in there, a scenario you have come up with that you're actually afraid will become true?
You know, I've had a couple of ideas over the years that I've put into manuscripts and then removed them because I didn't want to propagate the idea. For that reason, I won't tell you what they are.
Yeah.
But I do sometimes self-edit that way.
In a lot of ways, inventors and scientists and sometimes even policymakers can be inspired by science fiction. Do you ever hope that your writing will be prescriptive in any way?
Not so much. I mean, I suppose it's natural enough to do that. I love the idea that I might write something that would cause someone to ask a question which they might not otherwise have thought to ask, and which, indeed, I myself never thought to ask. If my ambitions were prescriptive, I'd be providing answers, but that's not my way. I want to stimulate curiosity because the answers that are going to save us are going to come from questions that we haven't even thought of asking yet, and which I'm not that likely to think of asking myself.
You're writing a book right now. We are taking time away from that. Do you want to tell us anything about it?
I was working on a book through 2016 that was set in approximately the fall of 2017 in San Francisco in the tech industry. It had a central element of artificial intelligence and a young female protagonist. And in the industry, she's known as the app whisperer. You give her your product. You put your product on her phone, and she's a kind of superpower user. And you observe how she works with your app, and then you can really improve your app. But she's given a whole new phone. It can't be her own phone that has a sort of Siri-like, this new digital assistant app. And it turns out to be this terrifyingly street smart special forces operative lady who doesn't know why she's stuck in a telephone and is extremely pissed off about it. And they bond. So that was good, and I was going along. But then November came, and the presidential election. And when I went back to work on this manuscript that just didn't work anymore because the 2017 I'd been writing in 2016 was just like some kind of stub or something.
I should jump in here to define. When you say stub, you mean essentially a parallel universe that occurs in a different timeline, right?
Yeah, a fork in the timeline. So they're in a different continuum. But then it occurred to me that what I had was a stub in which the outcome of the election had gone the other way. And so I started working with that. It's a much more interesting story now than it was in 2016. That's for sure.
You always write the first line first. Any chance you want to share your first line with us?
Well, I have the title, and the title is simply Agency. There's no article. It's not The Agency. It's just Agency. And it's agency in the sense of the capacity, the individual's capacity to affect change.
And fascinating. Yeah, that's a word we have been talking. That word has come up a lot. It's very timely.
Well, it came up for me in trying to figure out what I thought was really, really going on with the personal firearms argument in the United States. I think guns are really about a degree of personal agency. The question is, what degree of personal agency does a society want to allow? Mm. That got me thinking about agency generally. And it's interesting. I don't know where it's going in the book, but the characters keep talking about it. So, you know, I'm hoping to learn from them.
That is so interesting, just since so much of what we've been talking about is, I can't wait to see where this goes.
Well, thank you. I hope you will soon.
William Gibson is the author of many books, including Neuromancer and most recently The Peripheral and the upcoming Agency. William, thank you so much for talking with me.
Well, thank you. It's been delightful.
So the whole idea of this series is to launch a bunch of conversations about how tech is distributed in this country, whether it's to the guys in the Olympic swimming pools or the billionaires with the blood of the young people. My whole conversation with William Gibson actually lasted about an hour. So if you want to hear the entire thing without any fussy radio editors getting in the way, we're trying a little experiment. On our website, we're putting up the virtually untouched versions of some of these more interesting and geeky interviews, and we're calling it the Source Code, because I'm a giant nerd. So to hear the Source Code version of Mr. Gibson, head on over to marketplacetech.org. And in the meantime, please subscribe to this podcast if you don't already, and we would love it if you would leave us a review on iTunes. I'm Molly Wood. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.